This is an Enterprise Times business podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Matt Culkin, CEO of Appian.
Good morning, Ian. It's great to be here. I'm here from D.C. We're based in D.C., but our second largest office in the world is here in London. Appian has been around for 20 years. I'm one of the founders, and I've been the CEO for 20 years. Appian's a software company. We're a platform on which businesses can build their own unique applications.
You're the first company to have a low-code product and go public. What does low-code really mean to a lot of people, and why should they care?
Low-code is a new way to build unique applications, and it's much faster than previous ways. In the past, you would have had to build a unique application line by line. You'd write it like any code would be written. Low-code is different in that you express your intentions in a simple way, like a picture, a flowchart. You draw a flowchart. It's got a start and an end and nodes. And with this flowchart, you explain what the application is supposed to do. And then you make some reusable objects. When you're done, you can assemble an application as if you had assembled it out of Lego bricks. This is obviously faster than building an application the old way. We make a lot of emphasis on the speed. That's a big advantage of low-code. But another logical consequence of the low-code idea is that it is more powerful. And the reason for that is that you are not writing the application. The platform is writing it. Your job is to say what the application should do, but you don't actually write it. You draw the picture. You make the objects. You're expressing your intention. But the application is truly written by the platform. In translating your intentions into a piece of software, the application is actually written in the translation, which means that it can be arbitrarily powerful. It's no longer a function of the skill and the time of the designer. The designer's job is relatively limited. Now, the sophistication and power of the application is a function of the platform, and we can make the platform be extremely powerful. So just a couple quick examples to that. For example, we could make your application run on all mobile devices natively. We can make it run on all clouds. We could make it really scalable. We could make it extremely reliable and highly secure and have hot failover and run in different places on the cloud. All of this stuff could just come for free, essentially. I call this free power. It's the other natural consequence of the low-code idea is the application itself can be extremely, almost arbitrarily powerful because it's being written by the platform.
We've had other attempts to simplify this before. If we go back to the 80s, we had object orientation, the claim that everything would be assembled by business analysts and we'd only ever have two or three developers in any one company. It collapsed and failed and burnt. The same happened with rapid application development. The same with five or six other attempts as we've gone through. What makes this different?
This is certainly one of those ideas that is conceivable far long before it is practical. We've got a different approach, a better, a cleaner, a newer approach that I believe overcomes a lot of the problems that we've seen in the past with the methods of creating applications that you've just talked about. Many of those were code intensive. Many of them were relatively, I would say, inflexible, which is to say they didn't upgrade well, they didn't change well with the times. There has never been a platform that would give you as much leverage as Appian does today, which is to say the coder, the developer does a very small amount of work relative to how much power comes out the other side of the box. The leverage ratio is in excess of anything we've ever seen. And because of all that leverage, it means that more of the authorship is resident in the translation layer than in the developer. And as such, that part won't obsolete. If you as a developer have to express relatively little, then it's only that part, that external sign that might become out of date. Everything else we could upgrade. So let's say you build an application that works on every modern mobile device and then another one gets invented later on. We'll just be sure that your intention runs like an application natively on that new mobile device. Whereas on the platforms you talked about in the past, that would not have happened. Instead, those are ways of creating an application quickly, perhaps faster than before, but they didn't make an application that grew with you or that evolved with the future. Instead, they were fixed in time. I think that was really one of the problems. They were inflexible, those products. They were fixed in time. They didn't bring forward with modern innovations like this new platform does, and they didn't have the degree of leverage that Appian's offering now.
But how do we maintain going forward? One of the challenges when we've had code reuse in the past is first, code bloats over time. Secondly, we very quickly realized we were using lots and lots and lots of components, but we didn't really track those components terribly well. So when we found a flaw in a component or we needed to version a component, we didn't know what was using it. We didn't know where it was used. We didn't know the impact of changing it or updating it. How do you resolve that challenge?
We do address that. All those things are resolved in our platform. Every object is reusable and nestable, and changes flow through to anywhere it's used. And they're all individually testable, and they accumulate automated testing regimes, even as you create it. In the background, testing scripts are being authored simultaneously. Every object is addressable through testing and updating, and when you do update it, the change updates everywhere. We have realized, as many have, that every application can be boiled down to atoms. And those atoms are the objects that could be reassembled to make this or a different application. Those objects include interfaces, integrations, rules, facts, roles, users. These are the objects from which you create an application. As such, we can organize those by category, by date, by application. We can nest and group them. We've done something intuitive by allowing people to group and see these objects and then to update them in a fix once, apply everywhere fashion.
One of the challenges of having code that is fine, doesn't cause a problem in a company, and an application that is fully tested, is that it doesn't necessarily mean it's right for the company. As we increase the cadence of applications, we very quickly exceed our ability to know what the process is that they're supposed to be solving. How do we look at applications and ensure that actually what they're trying to do is what they're supposed to do? And more importantly, how do we then bring that back into the company so that as our processes change, we know what's going on?
This is very important. Software has been traditionally inflexible. Here I come back to that term again. What we're proposing is something far more flexible. It is my assumption that software that behaves exactly the way a company wants it to will still be wrong 3 months from now. Perfection is a very temporary state, and I'm not assuming that we land on it and stay. We can't stay. You have to change constantly in order to stay up. Most organizations find themselves anchored in the past by the inflexibility of their unique software. Our goal is to liberate them from that and allow the software to change fluidly, easily, to keep up with their latest practices and even to instantiate their ambitions. Wouldn't that be terrific? So that a software application didn't anchor you in the past, but instead pulled you into the future. It could be that the first time an organization instantiates its new intended behavior set would be in its software regime. And then later, people would pick it up and say, okay, so that's what we're supposed to do. I get it. That's the new pattern. Software could be a means of being pulled into the future instead of pulled back into the past. So that's the intention, to be extremely transparent and flexible, so that the software is as strategic as an organization can imagine it being. These flowcharts, these pictures, they're very easy to change. These rules, it's all drag and drop. The interface, it's drag and drop. It's exceptionally simple to make changes to the way this software operates because we assume you'll want to make the changes all the time.
But increase the cadence and you often destabilize a lot of organizations. Companies are concerned that if they democratize the building of applications, they're going to end up with people sitting at desks next to each other, all tweaking an application slightly differently. Now, there are pros and cons for this. You put 50 people in front of a form, and people will find different ways to fill that form in. One of the things we tried to do with rapid application development was to actually tweak it for the individual user, but without breaking the flow of what went on. It became too onerous to do. So how do you allow that flexibility? How do you enable people to get that higher cadence of delivering applications, but without ending up with 65 versions of the same application because you have 65 employees?
Yes, that's right. One of the main goals of this product is centralization. We should have a common set of data, a single login into 100 different applications, a single space where we can share conversations and alert each other to crises. One version of the truth. I want centralization, and you might think that a product like this that made it intuitive to make your own application would in fact encourage extreme decentralization because it liberates people to make their own. In order to be, in fact, a force for centralization, here's what we've done. We have a two-tier system. Developers can make objects. Non-developers can only use objects that developers have made. All of those objects are connected back to a central database, central environment, so you're always logging into the totality of all Appian applications, not to one application at a time. When an integration is made, it's made once for everybody. We're going to integrate into every data source you've got in the enterprise, but we're going to do it one time each. And so you won't have people remaking that or reinventing their facts. Then you won't have 20 different definitions of what EBITDA is because you've got 20 people with different access and different ideas of what the acronym stands for. You're going to have one. It'll be very central. centralized from a definitional standpoint, and then where on the periphery of the organization people need to assemble their own application, they may do so, but they do so with blocks borrowed from the central pile, which then relay data back to the central pile and have a common login, a common environment. And they're also sandboxed so that these non-developers can't create something that takes too much memory or brings down the total system. So we're careful about that as well. The two-tier system is how we avoid this. By the way, this is one of those things that makes us different from previous approaches to build applications easily. In the past, these application liberation schemes where everybody's going to be able to build their own, it's going to be really easy, led to dispersion and chaos. And we are taking this idea and implementing it from the top of an organization down. Our best friend is the CIO, because they're going to reduce the number of applications, they're going to narrow the footprint, they're going to create a tighter security perimeter. This is a very top of the organization friendly approach to making new applications.
How do you take this outside the organization? It's one thing to create a set of objects against the data that I own, I control, I manage. But companies no longer sit in isolation. Their supply chain, be that customer side or supplier side, is increasingly complex. Digital transformation is where they all want to be working together within this. But if we're going to build applications, why are we not pushing those objects further out? And once we do, can we contain them?
Let me talk about this. It was an early strategic decision that we made to play well with others in the enterprise. We would be a consumer of data, but not an owner of data. The old conventional wisdom is if you're going to build a software company, start by owning some data, and then they'll never get rid of you. You get your island, and you build a wall around it, and nobody messes with your data. Then you're home free. You'll be there for a generation. We've taken the opposite approach. We play well with others. We don't need to own any data. We don't need to be the authoritative source of anything, and if you want, you can export or API anything we've got easily out of the Appian repository. So we're not the owner of any official version of the data, but we do focus very much on integrating to it. So we got real-time connections, we'll make caches if you want, we'll connect ubiquitously with the data where it exists inside your enterprise. And it probably is sprawling in all directions, and some of it's in the cloud, and some of it's in a partner's databases, and you've got a login, a VPN to that, and some of it's in a non-relational format, and we've got all these different data sources. Appian has specialized in abiding with all of them, respecting them all, accessing them all, and as a result of that, we find ourselves well positioned for a heterogeneous future. Instead of fighting over who owns what, we figure we won't own anything. We're just going to deal with your enterprise the way you want it. Despite the fact that we don't own any of it, we'll report on all of it because we'll be good at integrating to this. It gives us a real advantage when we do something like make a call center where we get the best 360-degree view of a customer because we can query everything even though we own nothing.
One of the challenges I found looking around the website was your relationship with cybersecurity. 500 users, potentially 500 apps. I can deal with that because they're contained inside my wall. I know the objects. We built the objects. I know if the objects are secure. I know what testing they've gone through. Once I start to reach outside my organization or people start to reach in with these objects, they start to look odd. I have behavioral analytics that will suddenly say, hang on, what is that object doing? How do you integrate with security companies? How do you provide people with that evidence that this is safe, this is accurate? Because historically, we've always gone with black box input-output, and nobody knows what's going on in the middle.
That's right. Let me first speak generally about security and then address your question in particular. Generally, we've taken security extremely seriously. We come to the market, this low-code market, from the top, which is to say we began working with some of the world's largest organizations doing really mission-critical, highly secure stuff, and then worked our way down over time to the middle of the market. So in the early years of building Appian, we had to be exceptionally secure and integrate very well. We were one of the first 24 companies in the world to get the U.S. government's new FedRAMP security standard for cloud data security. It was difficult. The fact that we were so early says something about our commitment to being a security leader. We're also highly secure in that we take what would have been 100 silos and we consolidate them down to just one. So, for example, when we went to Aviva a few years ago, Aviva had 22 systems that had to be accessed when a customer called in with an issue to their call center. Now it's just Appian. We're a terrific consolidator. That streamlined things, and now it's 9 times as fast as it used to be to resolve an issue, and customers are happier for it, and it costs a lot less also. Those benefits happened because of our ability to consolidate. If you have fewer systems than you used to, then you are more secure than you used to be. Because if you had 22 systems, and I don't mean to suggest that Aviva was insecure, by the way, but if you had a lot of different systems, and any one of those could be a point of intrusion, then you run a greater risk than if you have one system, and particularly if that system, it would be even better, if that system were highly security aware, which we are. We substitute what used to be maybe a sprawl of different applications, and we reduce it down to one highly securitized application. I think that's very beneficial for security. I first wanted to say how committed we are to security and how on the front of the movement we are. However, let me also now address your question about security objects. You're working with Appian in our environment, and you're using an object. That object came from one of two places. Either it was part of a solution, and you got it from us off of our forum, where we have a lot of solutions posted. You're allowed to download them and use them. It either came from us, or it came from you. You wrote it, or we wrote it. But there isn't an economy whereby you just got handed an object, and you're supposed to wonder whether this is a black box or a virus or what's going on. That is not the situation. You own your objects. You can introspect them completely. They are all totally visible, transparent. There are no black boxes. You never have to guess what an object does. This is very different from the internet, where anything could land on your desktop. Our objects are so easy to understand. They're really intuitive, and they either came from us or you wrote them yourself.
How do you sell this to developers? Because we've had 30 years of people saying, oh, we're going to need fewer developers. The reality is we now have 20, 50, 100, 1,000 times more developers than before, and we still have a shortage.
We still have a shortage, and we're going to continue having a shortage. We need developers like never before. It's only going to grow. Appian allows each developer to have far more impact, but it is never used to reduce the count of developers. We realize that we need more and more of them. If a developer were 10 or 20 times as productive, you wouldn't want fewer of them, you'd want more. You wouldn't run out of work. You'd say, now let's do that backlog. We've got a 5-year backlog of applications that people want built. And by the way, once we build all that backlog, we're also going to go back and update every application every quarter, because applications should be living parts of the organization's behavior set instead of, as I was saying before, anchors in the past that preserve and fixate us on the way we used to operate. Software shouldn't be like that. We were looking out the skyline here just before the podcast. We were looking across London and observing these buildings and noting that some of them were built with flaws and that they needed some revision, perhaps. It strikes me that software, like buildings, takes a great deal of investment and is often built with flaws. Our intention is to change software so that instead of being very hard to repair, it's exceptionally easy to change and remake and fluctuate. Instead of a hardened software landscape, you should see a flexible and forward-looking software landscape.
We've seen a number of the major banks start to require all their staff go through some degree of coding experience. The principle being that if you're playing with a spreadsheet, you need to be able to write code to make it more effective. How do you now talk to developers and talk to IT managers about splitting up workload? E.g., these components should be your developers and doing here, and this is how you then train those people in the forward end to be able to assemble their applications.
That's right. I do think everybody could use a bit of training on code, because it would help everyone to think logically. Even in the decisions we make these days, these decisions are, after all, used multiple times. Even when you ask someone to do a thing, you're kind of writing code. Even if it's not a computer, merely to pass an instruction through an organization is an act of coding. And if people thought of it that way, they would realize that this training was applicable to everyone. So I'm in favor of that, but it isn't necessary in Appian. I'm not asking everybody to code, and what coding there is, particularly for citizen developers, is extremely simple. Instead, I focus on the IT department, and I empower the IT department. Our goal is to make a developer 10 or 20 times as productive, and if we can do that, then we don't need to put the spotlight on the non-developer. Some people's solution is, we're running out of developers, let's get these non-developers involved. I think that's a terrible idea, because the non-developers won't write things that are as logical or as cohesive as what would have been written by the developers. So that strikes me as the wrong answer to a serious problem. The right answer is, take the developers you've got and make them more productive.
If we look forward 3-5 years, languages take a long time to be adopted. New approaches to code and IT take even longer to be adopted. However, we have some things that are breaking the way things have always happened. Containers are a good example. They're accelerating our ability to virtualize. low-code is also being adopted at a much higher rate. If I were to ask you to look 3-5 years forward, where do you see it establishing itself? As the core of everybody's development? As a viable competitor to traditional languages? Where does it sit?
There's some polling data on this, by the way, lately, that shows that the IT executives expect low-code to become one of the primary ways they author code and create unique applications inside their enterprise in 5 years. We share that vision. We expect that that's the way things are going to go, and we believe it's going to be very liberating. It's going to change how software is used in an organization to be able to instantiate and to modify it as quickly as low-code promises to allow it to be done. I think it isn't so much that people will take a different approach to an immutable software concept, but that software itself will be considered very differently. Today, software is quite a mixed blessing. It's seen as necessary, and it is necessary, but it could be, in many cases, a necessary evil. Software is totally required in order to standardize on a behavior set or to make a intersection between behavior and data. We simply could not align our behavior. We couldn't standardize behavior nor align it with data if we weren't using software. Unfortunately, in many cases, that software must be unique because a business is unique, its context is unique, or it intends a unique behavior set to differentiate it versus competition. For many reasons, software must be unique, and here's where we really get into trouble, because most businesses, though they are obliged to create unique software, are not expert at that. Now, they're forced to do something, high stakes here also, because this is how you impress customers these days. Software is the front battle line. So you've got to write this software. It's the medium of competition, and it happens to be extremely expensive and difficult, sometimes insecure. There's so much that can go wrong in software, so much that can go wrong, and it's expensive even if it all goes right. As I say, a necessary evil, a very mixed proposition, necessary but dangerous, and high stakes all at the same time. I believe that this current software equilibrium can be altered. Software can really just be empowering in the future. It doesn't have to have all these negatives, the expense, the time, the risk. If we took those three things out of unique software, what a different tool would software seem to be to the corporation? A tool of empowerment instead of risk and obligation. That's our intent. Not just to change how the people in an organization view software, but how software is used generally by organizations, the role in which it fits, and the opportunity offered by the concept of software.
That's quite a grand vision. Matt, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure, Ian.